Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, a global clinical trial of an injectable contraceptive for men looked promising. It was 96% effective at preventing pregnancy. But the trial was cut short because of side effects the men experienced, mood changes, pain at the injection site, acne, and more. A lot of women who have carried the burden of birth control said, "Wait a minute, we've dealt with all that." So, is there a way for men to share the job? This hour on Point, the trial that folded and the future of male contraception. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Will we have a male contraceptive? Will men take it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With me first today from Washington is Julie Beck, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic. She covers health there. Julie Beck, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Now, this was something. So out comes this report in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Looked at this trial that started out with 320 volunteers around the world, we should stipulate, who came in, got the shot, and got underway. It was ultimately folded because of side effects. And the first big response, at least in the American sort of media sphere, was a whole lot of women saying, "What a bunch of wimps. We've been dealing with this kind of side effect for years." Is it a fair response, Julie?
I think it's definitely it is fair and it isn't fair. So for one, the trial was not stopped by the men themselves. It wasn't that the participants in the study were like, "Oh, we can't handle it. Please stop it." It was an independent committee that reviewed and decided that the side effects were going to be too much. So that, I think, has gotten a little bit distorted. But at the same time, I completely understand people being outraged or upset, because there are a lot of similar side effects that come with women's birth control options that they've been using for years.
I mean, here's a little bit of an ad from a commercial for the birth control pill, Ortho Tricyclin Low, and listen to the side effects here.
The pill does not protect against HIV or sexually transmitted diseases. Serious risks include blood clot, stroke, and heart attack. Cigarette smoking increases these risks, especially if you're a smoker over 35. Women who use the pill are urged not to smoke.
Blood clots, stroke, heart attack, that gets your attention in a hurry. And on The View on Wednesday, here was Whoopi Goldberg poking fun at men for not being able to handle, she said, the side effects women deal with all the time.
The guy said they couldn't take the side effects, like mood swings. Acne. Is anybody surprised by this?
I guess women not. Julie Beck, is there expectation out there that at some point that we're on some kind of path toward a male contraceptive? Was the trial at least promising in pointing the way forward?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, 96% is great, and they were not really – it wasn't something that was intended to go to market just yet. It was a clinical trial. It wasn't, getting FDA approval or anything. And so – and there have been a lot of there has been a lot of research lately into different methods of male birth control. There's something called basal gel, which is something that gets injected into the vas deferens and then sort of stops the sperm as they're passing through. So it's sort of like a less intense vasectomy. And then there's, various hormonal options that are being researched. So I think it is great that there's been an upswing of interest in doing research on that.
What's the science in the male contraceptive that was tested until the trials were brought to an end early? How does it work?
It's pretty similar to women's hormonal birth control options. I'd have to look it up to be exactly sure on the mechanics, but it's a combination hormone that they use as an injectable, and there are injectables for women, though I don't think they're particularly popular. reduced sperm count, basically, and it was pretty effective.
If you bring the sperm count low enough, you get very low chance of pregnancy, and boom, you've got a contraceptive. But there were side effects, and the trial was folded early. Julie Beck, stand by in Washington. I want to bring a couple of doctors in here with us to look at what really went down in this trial. From Seattle, Washington, William Bremner is here, Dr. Bill Bremner, professor, chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of Washington, and director of the Male Contraception Research Center at the University of Washington. Dr. Bremner, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure.
And from Boston, Dr. Lauren Hanley is here, obstetrician and gynecologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, practicing there for 16 years, assistant professor of obstetrics, gynecology, reproductive biology at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Hanley, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Bill Bremner, Dr. Bremner, take us through the mechanics of how this trial, male contraceptive, works or worked.
Okay. I think it's great to say at the beginning that this was actually a very positive result, and in terms of the numbers of the efficacy in terms of preventing pregnancy, and it's unfortunate that it was stopped the way it was. We can come back to that, but to the mechanics, these are injections of testosterone and of a progestin. So, as was said by the previous speaker, mm-hmm. the mechanism is similar to what happens in females. And that turns off the pituitary gland that is responsible for putting hormones in the blood that stimulate sperm production from the testis. So the result is that sperm counts drop dramatically. And in this case, 96-97% of the men dropped their sperm counts low enough to be effective as a contraceptive. And so that was a very positive result. The blood levels of testosterone are maintained normal in the men, so that there's not a problem with the results of low male hormone level or too high a male hormone level, except for the tendency that was noted in the study and has been noted in other studies to some men develop problems with acne.
Why does more testosterone, an injection of testosterone, shut down sperm production, Dr. Bremner?
Because it turns off the production of the hormones from the pituitary gland that stimulate sperm production. That's the normal feedback loop in all men's reproductive physiology. If the hormones from the testes are high, that turns down the levels of the hormones from the pituitary. If the hormones from the testes are low, the pituitary hormones go up in an effort to stimulate the testis. So that's the balance. It's like a thermostat maintaining the temperature in a room.
And what's the role? It's a two-chemical or hormone cocktail here. The other one is progestogen. I guess I associate that with is that female hormones?
Yeah, exactly. It's present in males. Nobody knows what it's good for in males, frankly, in normal physiology. But it certainly does have an effect in men, as it does in women, of suppressing the production of the pituitary hormone. So the two can be combined in a way, and we've got this down pretty well now, in a way to maintain testosterone levels normal and also turn off sperm production.
When you put them together, in this trial, they brought sperm levels down to 1 million per milliliter, which is considered clinically infertile, but a million still seems like a lot. How can you have a million in a milliliter and not be fertile, Dr. Bremner?
Yeah, good question. We always think it only takes one. But in fact, the normal levels are like 20 to 200 million per milliliter in normal men. So this is a dramatic, dramatic decrease in sperm production. Nobody's quite sure of the mechanism, but the observed fact is if you get normal men less than a million, it's very effective as a contraceptive. In fact, most of the men have essentially zero production, a few are between zero and a million.
Dr. Hanley, Lauren Hanley, were you following this trial as it went on around the world? Is this something that got a lot of attention before it was folded and everybody said, wait a minute, what happened here?
Well, I think in the contraception world, we've been watching this for quite a while, and we think about different options for women and for couples every day. And when I counsel women in the office, I go through all of the options with them, and obviously we all know that there are a wide range for women, but all women are different, and all women and all families are looking for choice. So it is exciting to think about the possibility of having an option for male contraception, and I think it just builds opportunities. And as we counsel each woman individually about what's going to be best for herself or a man and a woman together, then this might be a great option for a couple.
What about the side effects? I mean, I'm looking here back in 2010 when they were doing this, you had 46% of men reporting acne. 23% said the injection site hurt. 16% had some muscle pain. When you look at the side effects that women deal with, do those look like shut it down level side effects?
No, I didn't think those looked like shut it down. So like the other speakers, I was disappointed to hear about this. 96% is a very high efficacy, and many of the contraceptives currently FDA approved are lower than that with perfect use. For example, the pill has a 91% efficacy on average because oftentimes women forget to take their pill. So it is disappointing to hear that, and all of the contraceptive options have side effects. So it's a matter of choosing what's going to be best for each individual person. We have an injectable for women. It's given every 3 months. There's probably pain and soreness and muscle ache at the injection site as well, and that's FDA approved.
And Julie, we had 4.7% of the men experiencing mood swings, 2.8% experiencing depression. What about women when it comes to their hormonal birth control and side effects?
Yeah, I think that those are comparable to a lot of the options that are out there. In my piece, I just looked at one just as an example, because I think a lot of people will say, you know, oh, well, in the early trials of women's birth control, like the side effects were much, much worse, which is true. But if we compare it to what's happening today, there was an IUD that was approved by the FDA in 2015, so just last year, called Lileta, and they had 5.2% of users experiencing mood swings and 5.4% experiencing depression. So when it comes to depression, you know, that's like almost double or around double. And that's something that's on the market and in women's bodies right now.
Dr. Bremner, we'll come back and look at a lot of this, but is a male contraceptive coming? Do you think it's going to be?
Yes, I do. And I think the most likely first method available will be based on this technique that we're talking about right now. We can come back to it, but I think it's important to note that neither the men in the study nor the investigators wanted to stop the study, and neither did the Data Safety Monitoring Board, that is the safety experts, approve going ahead. It was a different group at a higher supervisory level within the World Health Organization for whatever reasons.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the big male contraception study trial that got folded because of side effects that were deemed too much. Lots of women said, what about our side effects? We're looking at the future of male contraception this hour. You can join us. Did you read about the global trial of a hormonal contraceptive for men? Were you thinking, at last? Did you hear how the trial was ended because men were having mood disorders, acne, injection site pain, increased libido? Were you thinking, well, what about women's side effects? Were you thinking men are wimps? It got a lot of pushback, blowback this week, a lot of it kind of humorous. Daily Show contributor Michelle Wolf joked about how women's birth control can have more side effects than men's.
You do realize when we take the pill, we get all those adverse side effects, and it decreases our sex drive, and it causes blood clots and strokes that can kill us. Now that I think about it, side effects are the only area where women earn more than men.
Okay, and she wasn't done. Here she was with Trevor Noah on The Daily Show.
Aw, poor men couldn't complete the birth control study because it gave you pimples and made you moody. You guys call that side effects? I call that day four of a fairy tale period. Yeah, that's right. In my fairy tale, there are pimples.
Geez, Michelle, on behalf of all men, I would like to apologize.
Not accepted. At the slightest inconvenience, you immediately surrendered. It's like if you got to the beaches of Normandy and were like, I can't fight, the weather makes me sad.
Okay, we're going to go back and look at how it worked. But, I mean, Julie Beck with us from The Atlantic, and we also got Dr. Lauren Hanley with us from the Massachusetts General Hospital, and Dr. William Bremner from the University of Washington Department of Medicine there, professor and chair, and director of the Male Contraception Research Center there. Julie, I mean, you looked at just a few examples of birth control options for women and some of their side effects. Ministrin 24FE, the NuvaRing, the Mirena intrauterine device. Can you run us through some of those side effects?
Yeah, I mean, there are basically very similar, or, you know, sometimes there are more. The birth control pill, this is just one kind of birth control pill, but it had headaches, nausea, cramps, yeast infections, acne, mood swings, weight gain. The Mirena IUD, you get pelvic abdominal pain. You can get cysts on your ovaries. You can get headaches, migraines, depression, heavy bleeding, all kinds of things. And then IUDs can also, you know, rarely perforate the uterus as well.
That's quite a lineup. Dr. Hanley, do women just plainly on the face of it put up with more side effects already than we saw described in this male trial?
Well, I think that ultimately women need to make a decision about caring for their body and looking at the risks of contraceptive options versus the risk of pregnancy. And we haven't really touched on that, but pregnancy has a lot of risks.
That's true.
And as women get older and unfortunately in our country heavier, we see more high blood pressure, more diabetes, and the risk of pregnancy is quite high in a lot of the women who I care for every day. So when we look at risk and individual choice, we need to make a really educated choice about what's going to be best for each individual person. And that's why I feel strongly that having options available for couples is really important. I think it was really important to see that 82% of these men wanted to continue and 76% of the women did as well. And hopefully that's going to open the door to further research and further options for couples.
I mean, I don't know how to look at the ethics of this, Dr. Hanley. You're saying women could perhaps be more open to the side effects of birth control because if they do get pregnant, pregnancy has its own risks. But of course, men are involved in all this, just not directly in their person in the pregnancy. So how do you look at the ethical sharing of risk and side effect exposure just because men don't actually face the pregnancy themselves?
Yeah, that's a very good point. So when we're looking at individual risk of the man versus the woman, certainly when we're looking at side effect profiles of a male contraceptive, we don't weigh them against the individual man becoming pregnant because that's physiologically not possible. But if a man wants to take on the burden in the couple, in the family, and those side effects are deemed reasonable and comparable, then I think that that should be an option and that choice should be there.
Dr. Benmer, can you speak to the mood swings that were found in this trial? How serious were they, and how might they compare with what we see among women on the pill, let's say?
In the opinion of the investigators of the trial and what was written in the paper that describes it, the mood swings, by and large, were not serious. They were viewed as mild to moderate, and they were predominantly in one or two centers. This was a 10-site study around the world. And the two centers had much higher rates than the remaining centers. So the investigators and the subjects in the study were very enthusiastic about continuing the study. So I appreciate the comments that everybody's saying about the existing methods having lots of side effects. I think that's correct. And I think that developing these methods for the male is totally reasonable, and we've got the side effects down in a range that's acceptable to the subjects, to the couples themselves. And it's important to add that this was really designed initially as an efficacy trial, that is the prevention of pregnancy. And in fact, it was extremely effective in that regard. So its efficacy in terms of preventing pregnancy is similar to or better than some existing methods, certainly much better than any method available for the man. So it's a very positive result overall of the study, and it was very puzzling and disappointing that the secondary review group decided to stop it. That was not the view of the subjects or of the investigators.
What's the standard that the review group was applying here to say pull the plug on this? Because they shut it down before it was finished. Would the same thing have happened if they were testing birth control on women? Is there a different standard, or how are people interpreting the shutdown?
Well, I can't exactly, you know, get in the middle of their head about why they did what they did. It was a confidential decision, but all I can say is from the vantage point of myself, having worked in the area for decades, it was unfortunate, and I personally believe, from what I know of the situation, not an appropriate decision.
Let's go to our callers. Chris in Buffalo, New York. Chris, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had to call because it's kind of funny. I do think that there is, that whether or not saying there is a birth control for men, and it is called a condom. And the one thing about that, no matter what, is it prevents from sexually transmitted diseases. But the one thing I haven't heard, and maybe part of it is because I was waiting and my radio was off. But
yeah.
I'm concerned personally because as somebody who took the pill at different times in my life, and I'm 46 now,
okay.
It was not something that worked for me. It was something that I had, I mean, maybe for women, they get side effects. It's called getting your period every month. So, yes, we are used to it, and it's great fodder for comedians, and it feels like, you know, it's kind of a funny situation. But the truth is, anytime that you're messing with your pituitary gland and you're looking at imbalancing hormones, there's long-term effects as I move towards menopause that I'm finding and has to do with, you know, your hormones and your pituitary gland. It's a finely balanced chemistry in your body. And to say, oh, well, there were just pimples and mood swings,
yep.
Well, the trials that the FDA does, not long enough these days. And I think to some extent, it's whether you're a male or female, there should be a question in regards to the hormonal contraception, period.
The whole idea of hormonal contraception, let us pick it up. Lauren Hanley, Dr. Hanley, you must deal with women who have concerns, questions, or even long-term impacts, which are not great if they're very, very long, I suppose. I don't know. You tell us on the pill. You hear our caller, she says, why are we going down this road for either gender?
Well, I think that when you look at risks and benefits, there are actually quite a few benefits of taking birth control pills. For example, the pill decreases the risk of endometrial cancer. The pill decreases the risk of ovarian cancer. We actually put high-risk women on birth control pills with family histories or BRCA testing. That's indicative that they may be at increased risk of ovarian cancer. I think since the 50s, when we started, you know, the first generation of pills, which were obviously much higher dose and much higher risk, we've come a long way in really fine-tuning how we can affect the pituitary gland. And we've come to a point now where we've decreased the fraction of the estrogen that women get, although we still know that estrogen can be very dangerous for some women with particular medical issues such as high blood pressure, history of migraines, or history of previous
mm-hmm.
clots.
Mm-hmm. All in all, what about the risks on hormonal birth control for women? Are there risks for long-term use of hormonal birth control?
Overall, in the properly screened woman, it's very low risk and, as I said, can be protective. It's really important to discuss medical history thoroughly with your healthcare provider before going on a pill. But overall, the pill is extremely safe, and most of the risk is seen quite early. We'll see women, unfortunately, develop strokes or blood clots within the first few months. I typically have a woman come back to see me within 3 months of starting a new contraceptive method so that I can check in on her blood pressure, her symptoms, and make sure that everything's going smoothly. Overall, the long-term risks are low.
Can you explain why in this trial where they're getting more testosterone, they had increased sex drive, the men who were participating in the trial? We hear sometimes about women having decreased sex drive when they're on hormonal birth control. Why would we see that difference, Dr. Hanley?
Well, women don't get testosterone in the birth control pill. So there are two types of birth control pills on the market. One is called a progesterone-only pill, and one is called a combined oral contraceptive, which has estrogen and progesterone. Neither of those have testosterone. Testosterone is what increases libido and sex drive, and so that's not present for women.
Dr. Brenmere, is that why men were happy to participate in this study, because they were raring to go?
Well, not as a primary motivation. No, in many of the studies, the libido actually isn't changed very much. In this particular one, it was reported to have gone up, and that, as was just stated, is likely an effect of the combination of the testosterone replacement plus some of the progestins have a little bit of an androgenic effect, and that is what drives libido in both males and females. So, but the main motivation in general for people being on the studies is are variable, as you could guess, but sometimes it's problems with their female partners have had with the female methods. Partly it's they volunteer out of altruism. Actually, we pay them a little bit, but not much, and they really just want to see a method developed for men. And some of our subjects in other studies are single men who also want to be in a position to be able to control their own fertility and prevent causing a pregnancy. The comment was made earlier about condoms. Condoms are partially effective against both sexually transmitted disease and inducing pregnancy, but they're not terribly effective, and condom failure is common, and it is one of the reasons that men come on a hormonal method as a trial.
If this was 96% effective,
actually, most of these couples, of course, are monogamous couples who are not actually really worried about HIV transmission or other sexually transmitted diseases. They're really worried about pregnancy.
That was one of the requirements for participating in this study, to be in a monogamous couple. What was the framework for it? What about condom effectiveness overall? If it's 96% for this trial result, what does condom end up being, Dr. Bremner?
I apologize. Something went wrong with the sound transmission just then. Could you briefly ask the question?
How effective are condoms all in all compared to the 96% effectiveness of this hormonal contraceptive?
Right. Well, the generally reported failure rates are around 15 to 20% at least if they're used perfectly. And there are many, many reports of, course, slippage, breakage, but particularly non-use, because it has to be used with every act of coitus and or sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. And that's for all kinds of reasons not perfect.
Julie Beck, what about the trust issue here? These were long-term relationships. That was part of the requirement for participation. But, of course, that's not the way it always works. Men may trust women because assuming they don't want to get pregnant in many circumstances. But would women trust men who say, oh, yeah, I've taken a shot. I've had the pill. Don't worry. You're not going to get pregnant with me.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer. I think that if people are not in a long-term relationship or, you know, it's like a new partner, they're probably going to want to use condoms anyways just to protect against STDs. And then that is sort of a separate issue than the pregnancy issue. I think it is true that, you know, historically and today, the burden of birth control is primarily on women, unfortunately. The only option that men have, short of getting a vasectomy, is to wear a condom. And so especially if people are not comfortable with the failure rates of condoms that he just mentioned, you know, they're probably going to want to go for the surer thing. And that is something that is going to unfortunately be the woman's responsibility as of now.
Jim in Cleveland, Ohio. Jim, sorry about the Indians, but thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I got a comment to make. I think it's high time that men step up to the plate, so to speak.
Okay.
And take responsibility. When I was 23, my girlfriend, who at the time was 22, had a blood clot and passed away due to the birth control pill that she was taking.
Oh, wow. Terrible.
And
sorry.
I would give anything, and I would deal with a few zits or mood swings to protect, you know, my loved one. I think this was, when I heard about it yesterday, I thought, oh, this is so fantastic. And then to hear that, you know, they backed out of it, that they stopped it, to me that was just mind-blowing, you know. All the pressure is always put on the woman to be responsible, to do this, to do that, you know, to deal with the unwanted, unplanned pregnancy. It's time that men start taking responsibility for their sexual behavior and do what is right. And I think this is a fantastic thing, and I hope it makes it to market.
Jim, do you think most men would share that view, step up with that attitude?
If they love the person they're with and they're responsible men, I believe so.
I appreciate your call from Cleveland, Jim. Dr. Hanley, what about it? Male willingness to pick up this job, this burden, if you will.
Well, first of all, Jim, I'm so sorry to hear about your loss. That's an incredibly tragic story. But unfortunately, we do see that. And that is one of the things that we think about when we screen women for family history of blood clots or personal history of blood clots before putting them on a combined oral contraceptive. Unfortunately, sometimes it's never known until something like that happens. So I'm so sorry.
As far as men stepping up, I think it's an individual choice, and I'm just really feeling like broadening choice is the way to go here. Each couple is going to have to decide what's right for them, and if in a couple's relationship they feel like that's going to be the best for them, I would love to see that option out there on the market. I think ultimately some women are going to want to take the burden onto themselves because they feel like it's their body, and they want to ultimately not figure out, is he going to go for his shot or is he going to forget and, you know, go out to coffee instead or something like that? And ultimately, they're going to have to decide what's going to be best. But having that choice out there, I think, is what's paramount.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Wonder Capital, asking what if you could help combat global climate change and make money at the same time? Introducing Wonder Capital, the award-winning investment platform that allows individuals to invest in solar energy projects across the U.S. Wonder's online investment platform allows you to earn up to 8.5% annually while diversifying your portfolio, curbing pollution, and combating climate change. And best of all, Wonder Capital doesn't take any fees for investing your money. Create an account for free at wondercapital.com/onpoint. Wonder Capital. Do well and do good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big male contraception trial that got folded because of side effects that were deemed too much. Lots of women saying, what about our side effects here? And we're looking at the future of male contraception this hour. Julie Beck is with us from The Atlantic. Dr. William Bremner is with us from the Male Contraception Research Center at the University of Washington. With us from Seattle. With us from Boston, Dr. Lauren Hanley at the Massachusetts General Hospital, obstetrician, gynecologist there. You can join us this hour. Women, would you like your guy to be on something to avoid pregnancy? Are you the one taking care of contraception now? Do you have side effects? And men, are you ready to take a contraceptive pill or shot, hormonal, if they can figure it out? Here's a little sound in the streets of New York. Sabri Benashour co-hosts Actuality, this podcast, Marketplace and Quartz, went out in the streets of New York and asked women about male contraception.
If there was a male pill, would you ask your male partner to use it?
Absolutely.
I would love for him to use it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing, just the other way around.
The flip side of that is, I guess, would you trust men if there was like a pill that you had to take regularly?
That's the problem, too. I guess it depends on who you're with.
And his co-host, Tim Fernholz, also went on the streets of New York. Here we are.
What if you don't trust women to take that pill?
If there were a male pill, would you take it?
Yes. I have no desire to have a kid, and if I had control over that, I would.
I don't see why not. Yeah.
As long as it's safe and, you know, tested and everything, they make sure no long-term effects for you, then, yeah, why not?
Long-term effects. Sounds like openness right there. Dr. Bremner, so this drives down the sperm count. When you get off the shot, does it come back up, the sperm count? How long does that take? How sure is it that it comes back?
Yes, it does come back, and that's been tested in several thousand men now, including in this study, which showed full recovery. The other thing that's worth noting is that close to 30% of contraception overall in the United States now is done by male methods, about 15% condom and 15% vasectomy. Of course, the problem of vasectomy is it's essentially irreversible, and we've talked about the problem with condoms. Around the issue of trust, there have been several studies of mm-hmm. women's willingness to trust a man, and in stable monogamous couples, it's well over 95% of women say they would trust their male partner. Of course, if the relationship is unstable, there's concerns with trust both ways, of the woman trusting the man and the man trusting the woman, about who's taking what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess in a stable relationship, everybody has an investment in this. Otherwise, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Molly in Milton, Wisconsin. Thank you for calling, Molly. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, so speaking to the trust, my husband and I, we do a simple thermal method. Most people would know that by natural family planning. And I know when everyone hears that, they roll their eyes and say, that doesn't work. It's, you know, but actually, you know, from our experience, it does work. We've used it to prevent and to achieve pregnancy. And so
you just keep track of when you're fertile. You just keep careful track of when you're fertile, Molly.
Yes. Yeah. I chart my symptoms. So I chart. I check my cervix where it is, That indicates how close I am to ovulating.
Right.
And I also check the fluid that comes out also tells me. And then in hindsight, if my temperature raises in the morning, then I know that I've ovulated and we're safe. And so when I am fertile, we can choose to do another method,
right.
You know, any of the methods listed.
Sure.
So, you know, I definitely think that it's something that people don't really look into, but we feel like it has increased our trust. He very much participates and knows what's going on. And so that's one comment. And then the second comment that I have, I do appreciate the work that's being done for the male contraception. One thing, there is a risk. It is low, but that a woman will, on the hormonal birth control, will conceive a child. And because of how the hormonal birth control works, the developing embryo will be aborted. Basically, it will pass through because the endometrium lining is changed so that it prevents the pregnancy from continuing. And so I think with the male contraception, that wouldn't be obviously a risk. So
that's interesting.
Those are my comments, and I'll...
Yeah, that's great, Molly. I really appreciate your call. Dr. Hanley, can we pick those up? And first, the risk to an embryo when there's conception in spite of being on the contraceptive.
Well, the mechanism of action of the birth control pill is to suppress ovulation, actually similar to the male contraceptive to suppress sperm count.
Yeah.
So I think that the mechanism of action is as the caller is discussing, is actually not the case.
But maybe I misstated it. Is there some, let's say on the other side, if you get off of the hormonal contraceptive and then you get pregnant, is there some greater risk to the embryo?
No. No. In fact, women will often conceive their first cycle off of oral contraceptive pills, and the studies do not support that there's any risk of embryo toxicity or increased miscarriage.
And what about a woman or a couple who says, why go down this hormonal path at all? Let's just pay close attention to our bodies, know when the woman's ovulating, avoid that time or use alternate birth control then, and not even have to get into the side effects of hormonal.
So that goes into choice, and I think that each couple, again, needs to decide what's going to work best for them. That method of contraception has a failure rate of approximately 25%. So it just depends what's going to be right for the couple, and avoiding intercourse around that time is obviously important, but that is the quoted failure rate, and most couples will not accept 25% as a failure rate. In fact, this male contraceptive was 97%, which is a great efficacy, and it seems to be halted, which is disappointing. So I think that
failure rate, 25%, is that because they just aren't adept at tracking the state of fertility,
It's quite complicated to do that well. Checking the cervical mucus and the discharge and the thickness of it, which is a sign of whether ovulation is occurring, is not easy. And I don't think many women want to do it or really can learn to do it well. The basal body temperature, which is tracking your temperature, because when you ovulate, your temperature does go up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a retrospective knowledge, and we know that eggs live for about 12 to 18 hours, and having sex around the time of ovulation is obviously the most fertile phase, so people use it to try and conceive as well as try not to conceive.
Right. I mean, there are apps out there now that I've seen them that's like they tell you or they suggest that they're telling you exactly when you can or can't or when there's fertility or not. Is it?
Absolutely. There's apps out there, but they all depend on the woman's ability to assess her own body.
Beth Ann in Raleigh, North Carolina. Beth Ann, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment about the male birth control. I just am so excited about this study, and I hope they continue to do it. We had a situation in our family where my brother got somebody pregnant that he wasn't married to, and the woman decided to keep the baby. And unfortunately, it's been a very bad situation for really everyone involved. And I feel like if he had had that option, this wouldn't have happened. And I know a lot of guys that it's happened to. And so we're really getting a lot of babies born out of wedlock where, you know, if the males had had an option, I don't think a lot of males can trust females out here. So I understand the male's perspective, and I really would like to see this go forward.
Bring it on, you say. I appreciate your call, Beth Ann. Dr. Bremner, what are the odds now? Now that this global trial got folded, are we in, you know, Nowheresville on this, or can it be brought back? Who's pushing to do more of this? What kind of timetable might this be on?
Right. Well, our own group here in Seattle and others, a couple of others around the country, are actively working in this area with hormonal methods and assessment of couples' priorities. However, it's really supported at this point only by the National Institutes of Health in the United States, and most of the foundations have ceased. And the pharmaceutical industry, for whatever difficult to explain reasons, has never jumped into this area. And so we've never, those of us working in the area have really never had extensive pharmaceutical industry support. And that is really one thing I think the listeners might take away from this is to agitate for more pharmaceutical industry involvement in this area.
I mean, Julie Beck, you've written about Bayer giving up on a male contraceptive because it was an annual implant. It had a quarterly injection. And I think one of your colleagues there reported that the company concluded that men would consider that annual implant and quarterly injection inconvenient.
Yeah. So this is what I think is the major hurdle, honestly, because we've seen from this trial and from callers and everybody that there is interest in this. And, you know, 80% of these people wanted to keep using the birth control. I think women would love to have some of the burden relieved. So I think what it is it's an institutional sort of societal hurdle that birth control just is not as essential for men, unfortunately, as it is for women. You know, they can already get the benefits of not having a kid if the woman is on birth control, and they, you know, now it's going to be the same benefit, but, you know, maybe they will also have these side effects. And you know, birth control has been really, really essential for women's freedom, honestly, you know, their ability to work and go mm-hmm. to college and mm-hmm. control their own bodies. And men have not needed that in the same way. And so I think that is going to be the hurdle that we have to jump over.
Well, Dr. Hanley, do you see that as the pharmaceutical industry's sticking point here, that they just don't believe men will have the incentive to dive in and really use contraceptives?
I couldn't agree more with Julie. I think that is the case, and bearing side effects for women does equal freedom. So, case in point, we see how women, you know, come into the office all the time looking for sort of the lesser of the evils, and what's going to be the best for their particular situation.
Lesser of evils. Elizabeth in Melrose, Massachusetts. You're on, Elizabeth. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to respond to the question, why go on the hormonal path for men and women? And for me, it wasn't only about family planning, but also quality of life. I've been taking a pill for 20 years, and it's changed my life for the better. I now have three beautiful, healthy children, but for the 20 years I've been taking it, or before I had been taking it, my period would occur between 18 or 22 days, lasting 6 or 7 days, extremely heavy blood flow,
yep.
Severe cramps. It really encroached on my quality of life. And
yep.
None of that happens with taking the pill. And I know it's detrimental for some women, but it's been great for me.
So there's three cheers for this option for you. And I guess it is very personal, but it worked out really well for you. And I appreciate your call, Elizabeth. Very freeing when it works, especially for women. Chris in Clarksville, Tennessee. Chris, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to affirm the sort of due cynicism from a lot of women and probably a lot of men listening in about the abandonment of the study, because I think that generally it speaks to the historical misogyny that pervades our sort of gender disparity here. My evidence is anecdotal at best, but I think that it does speak to that disparity. After my second child was born, I'm a high school teacher, and my students were asking, are you guys thinking ever of having any more kids? And I said, no, we're completely done. And I'm even thinking about, you know, seeing a doctor about making sure that we don't have any more kids.
You mean the vasectomy path there, I guess you're suggesting.
To have a vasectomy particularly. And their reaction was so just shocked and immediately defiant, and they skipped beyond even just like, why don't you wear prophylactic, immediately to their most logical, well, why didn't your wife just get her tubes tied? This incredibly invasive and extreme, not extreme, but much
yeah.
more involved. Wait,
these were your friends or family, what'd you say, Chris, who responded?
I'm sorry, they were students, high school
students. Oh,
yeah.
But you would already have two children, and they thought it would be weird for you to have a vasectomy.
Well, they thought it was, I guess in the course of the discussion, it came out the rationale among all of them was that it was in some way emasculating. And, you know, this is very clearly like just sort of the woman's job. And even the female students seemingly admitted very quick defeat as like, well, yeah, you know, it's kind of, this is more of the woman's role. And so I took the point to continue a discussion about, you know, that there's still work to be done to connect that divide. I am very thankful that there is this other option opening up for men if maybe going under the knife scares them, because I think it does track towards us trying to build that divide, a bridge across. But at the same time, I think that the hang up here is still this
cultural
attitude, yeah, societally, that it is just not men's problem.
Yeah. How'd the vasectomy work out for you, Chris?
Completely fine. Nothing. There are no side effects. It was a fairly painless procedure. I was able to perform, if you will, even days after, and there's been really no noticeable side effects. This has been over a year in the works now.
All right. Testifying there from Clarksville, Tennessee. Chris, I really appreciate your call. Dr. Hanley, do you see in some way cultural resistance beyond individual? Of course, no individual escapes culture. But is there a cultural presumption that's at work here, playing its way out in research trials, all of it?
I think that there definitely is. I see a lot of women from many different cultures, and it's been very interesting for me to hear about their contraceptive discussions with their partners. I see many women year after year, and I have written in my notes, partner thinking about having a vasectomy. Then the next year she comes back for her checkup, partner still thinking about having a vasectomy. And we're working on,
very thoughtful,
you know, what are we going to do in the interim? And yeah, so that's when we get into LARCs, which we haven't really talked about this hour at all, but long-acting reversible contraceptives, which are really our first line, looking at IUDs and the mm-hmm, progesterone implant. And then also just a brief word about the previous caller who had a vasectomy. When you look at sterilization methods of men versus women, the risk for a woman undergoing a tubal ligation is certainly higher with respect to having to have general anesthesia, using a laparoscope, putting instruments into the abdomen where there could be injury to other surrounding organs. So clearly a vasectomy is a safer procedure, but interestingly, when push comes to shove, most men are really would rather see their partner choose an option.
Culture at work here, science working a bit slowly, perhaps, on the male contraception side. Dr. William Bremner says it's coming, though. We will watch for that. Dr. Lauren Hanley at the Massachusetts General Hospital and at Harvard Medical School, it's great that you joined us this hour. Really appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. William Bremner, a professor and chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of Washington there at the Male Contraception Research Center. Bill Bremner, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure. Glad you did the show.
Glad to do it. And Julie Beck at the Atlantic, who wrote about this while everybody was still just shaking their heads, and very compellingly. Julie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, thanks for all your insights. Thanks for sharing your stories right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.